if my son or my daughter were in a marriage and they weren't happy and they were staying because they were worried what other people thought, would I think that was how I wanted them to live their life? No. And so I realized that this is the thing. I always say this, like, I don't want my children to inherit my money. I want them to inherit my mindset.
Welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we talk all things business, Web3, and NFTs. We're on a mission to educate, elevate, and empower women into the world of Web3. So join us on this journey as we learn together from leading experts. And remember, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. So please do your own research and enjoy today's episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sisterhood Club podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard, and normally Pam Caldwell, but unfortunately she can't join us this evening. She is at home with little baby Sky and feeling pretty flat out from a really big couple of days, so I've told her to rest up today. But today I am extremely excited and honored to be sat with a wonderful woman, Rosie Leach. Rosie is a self-love and happiness coach, helping women find their self-worth and confidence. Rosie's coaching helps women get to the root of what is holding them back in life and provides them with the tools to create a lifelong loving relationship with themselves. Rosie believes self-love is the key to everything and enables people to create the life they deserve. Rosie is also one of our amazing educators within the Sisterhood School, and I am honored to have her courses on our platform. Rosie, so good to have you here today. I'm really excited to get into this conversation, but before we get into the, you know, nitty-gritty about everything all to do with self-love and confidence, I'd love to take it back to your beginning, your journey, and what got you so passionate about these important topics that we're going to cover today. So over to you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
That is straight into the nitty-gritty, actually, because firstly, thank you for having me. Essentially, my own lack of self-love is what led me to the position that I'm in, which I think is probably how a lot of coaches get there. We know how it feels to not have something. We work out how to finally get that thing, and it feels just like you can't not share that information. So realistically, it actually probably starts really, really young for me, in that I grew up as I had a very picture perfect childhood with the lovely little house in the Cotswolds. My parents are together. I'm an only child, so maybe I'm a little bit spoiled. And I was your perfect goody two shoes, is probably the phrase I would use. And that became my identity. And I would say, even in those very early stages, being the good girl and getting things right was very much who I was and who I wanted to be. Various different issues arose from that, because there is no such thing as being perfect. But unfortunately, we all seem to be striving for that perfection that doesn't exist. And for me, this manifested in anxiety hugely, hugely. I spent a lot of my teen years very, very anxious. And it just never felt like I was enough. I remember even being that young and thinking, I can't do this. I'm never going to achieve this. I'm not as good as this person. I'm never going to be the best in my class at this. And it was always striving for that. And I just basically knew that I wanted to carve out this textbook life. I always refer to it as my textbook life. That my past life is my textbook life. And so that quest for that textbook life started, and I made sure I did well in my GCSEs and my A-levels. I made sure that I went to university. Neither of my parents went to university. I went to university to do a psychology degree. And I knew I wanted to be married by the time I was 20. That was which is so young, purely because my mum got married when she was 20. So that was how you did things. You know, my parents were together. That was my textbook. That's what I'd learned from. So I got engaged when I was 19, and I got married when I was 21. And it actually, I remember thinking, I'm late. Like, I'm running late with this. My life is not on plan. That 1 year felt like a huge, huge failure in a way. Got the house in the country with the nice garden and four bedrooms and the drive and perfect. Got a job that I liked. And then started to try and have a family. And all the while, my anxiety was always ticking under the surface. There was always this idea that I was playing catch up. I was trying to live this, like I said, perfect life. And my anxiety was always very, very high. If you knew me, and I think like a lot of people, it's very high functioning anxiety. Nobody would have ever guessed that I was an anxious person. I always seemed like I had things together and I was okay. But under the surface, I was struggling. But also, I very much believed that that's who I was because I'd always felt that way. I couldn't really remember a time where I didn't feel anxious. I can remember genuinely feeling anxious as young as four. And that nervy feeling was normal for me. And so next on the agenda was, right, start a family. I knew I always wanted to be a parent. And then that didn't happen. It just didn't work. I had problems with my periods and various different things. After about a year, I eventually got pregnant. And that pregnancy, unfortunately, ended in a miscarriage. So again, this wasn't going to my textbook life, and I felt like I'd failed. It felt like a really big failure. I was really, really hard on myself about that, which is something now that I actually look back on and I feel so sorry for that version of me that thought that was her fault or that this meant there was something wrong with her, because it just clearly isn't the case. And I got pregnant again quite quickly afterwards and had my little boy. He's now nearly five, actually. And I spent the whole time being really anxious. For the first time in my life, my anxiety got debilitating. And I would say, well, I had a breakdown, essentially. When I was pregnant with my son, towards the end, I couldn't leave my house, couldn't eat, couldn't be around my husband. Everything was too much. And it was very, very intense. And it kind of continued after he was born. And I feel like this was a big turning point in life for me, because those years of anxiety kind of came to a head. And to give you an idea of how bad that was, when he was born, I was buying clothes for him a year in advance because I was worried that I was going to die and he wasn't going to be looked after.
Oh my God.
And so I was living in a constant state of, I'm going to die or he's going to die. And it was so intense. And I tried anti-anxiety medication for the first time. I'd had counseling at different parts throughout my life. My marriage along the side of this wasn't happy. We were friends, and it was kind of, that was what it was. Neither of us wanted to be in that. But for me, the idea of getting divorced did not follow my textbook plan. So divorce was never supposed to be on the cards, because that's just not what you do. And in my family, no one gets divorced. It's a really big taboo kind of subject, you know. I'm a small town girl. If I got divorced, that would be the business of everybody, and the shame and judgment. And so in my mind, I'd resign myself to the fact that I would be in this marriage forever and it wouldn't be great. It wouldn't be bad, and that would be it. And I couldn't imagine taking that step of leaving that marriage, because it was too shameful for me. And I would and it's sad, because I'd got to a point where I'd rather be unhappy and rather just tick along in that life and keep filling those textbooks, because I worried so much what everybody else thought and I didn't want to be a failure. And then my marriage ended. The worst thing that I thought was going to happen happened, and it was the best thing that ever happened. And it was in that moment that I started asking questions. I started asking, okay, look, my life has kind of fallen apart, so this time maybe I should build it for me. Because there's always been that underlying feeling that this wasn't my life, because I was doing the things that I thought I should be doing. And that feeling is a very hollow feeling, to be creating something that on the surface is okay. And I genuinely believe there's a lot of women and men probably who are in that position where we don't think we can have all the things that we want, and we worry greatly what other people think of us. And it's, I think, one of the biggest things that holds us back is that fear of, you know, the what if this happens, what will they think, what will they say, what will this mean about me? And the truth is, in that moment is when I realized I didn't love myself. I'd always known that I felt a bit lost and I didn't know what was going on and I didn't really know who I was in a lot of ways. But it was the first time I made that connection that maybe I'm making some of these decisions because I don't think I deserve this, or there's something in me that that not enoughness that, you know, and I don't think I've ever met a person that doesn't have that feeling of not enoughness. And that's sad. Yeah. This, you know, it's so overpowering. So from there, I sort of rebuilt myself. And actually, in those years, I made a lot of interesting decisions, let's call them. And it wasn't an overnight thing where I went, oh my God, yeah, now I'm just going to love myself. And everything's going to be fine. Actually, what followed was probably about a year where I felt like I was almost watching my own life. There were things happening. I got pregnant very quickly with somebody else, with my daughter. And I just kind of, I unraveled a bit. But in that unraveling, I found lots of parts of me that were me. And so it wasn't immediately amazing, and it wasn't immediately like I started just knowing how I was going to make this work. I'd never felt self-love, so I didn't know how to do that. But it was where I sort of realized I didn't have it, and it was where I started the quest for finding it. And I started reading, and I started learning, and I started understanding what it was and what it meant. And and one of the biggest things for me is I realized that this is the one thing, if I can teach my children, it's all they need. Because if my son or my daughter were in a marriage and they weren't happy and they were staying because they were worried what other people thought, would I think that was how I wanted them to live their life? No. And so I realized that this is the thing. I always say this, like, I don't want my children to inherit my money. I want them to inherit my mindset. Like, that is the biggest thing I think I can ever give to them. So it's been a long old process. And I have worked on a lot of different things, and it was something that I never thought I'd be a coach. If you'd have said to me, Rosie, 5 years ago, this is where you'll be, she'd be like, no way. But there was something about it that when I was actually sat there, my daughter was 6 weeks old, I was sat breastfeeding her, and I just thought, I don't ever want her to feel the way that I felt. And I think I have these tools that I've learned through getting to know myself and my situation and understanding what self-love is, and I need to teach other people to do this. So I signed up for my coaching course there and then, literally as she was breastfeeding. I signed up for 6 months, I started my business, and it's just gone from there.
Wow. There's so much that I'm gonna pull out of all this.
Sorry, but that was a lot.
No, it was absolutely phenomenal. And I actually want to thank you for being so honest, open, and vulnerable, because this is the sort of thing that we don't talk about sometimes as women. We don't want to share, and we carry so much shame and guilt and all of these things inside of us. And if we don't look at it, if we don't deal with it, it eats away at us, and we become extremely unhappy and unfulfilled, and wonder why we're just constantly going from one problem to the next, and we're just feeling so empty inside. I feel like it's so important. The biggest gift you could give yourself is to really look in and be like, as soon as you start taking responsibility and you realize that I am the reason why I'm in this situation, and you start unpacking it, right? But there's so many things that I could relate to what you just said. The first thing that you said was all about the anxiety piece. And I have been through terrible anxiety myself through most of my 20s. And when I look back and I reflect on that now, I think part of that was because I was living so far out of alignment from who I actually was. I was in a very stressful sales job. I was doing things that I'm not proud of just to get sales in. And I became almost a woman that I didn't recognize anymore. And it was just, this is not who I want to be. This is not my natural personality. This is not a life living in alignment with my values. But what I had done in that process was tie my sense of worth into my career. So any time that I didn't do well at work, I felt unsuccessful, which then made my anxiety even worse. And it was just this constant cycle of basically just not being able to breathe. Like that was how bad it got. I would have panic attacks on the way to work. I'd have to get off the train, sit on a bench just to catch my breath. Like it got really, really bad. And hindsight's a wonderful thing, right? But if I look back at that woman, it was just that, again, she was just so caught up in the hamster wheel of life and looking at and thinking about, well, if I quit this job, what are people going to think? And yeah, I could function very well with anxiety, but I was a mess. I was so unhealthy. But from the outside looking in, I was successful. I had a well-paid job. I just bought a house. I was married. You know, everything was going well in my life. But inside, I was screaming. I was so unhappy. And I just think that's such an important message to get across, because I honestly believe that a lot of anxiety comes from living a life so far away from our values, and we're just completely out of alignment. So thank you for sharing that. But I really want to get into now, like you've mentioned that a few things about this textbook life, this vision that you had and society has. And I want to really understand the process that you went through to really detach yourself from that and start loving yourself for you, and not because you had a house or you were married or you had children. Like, where did that self-love journey really begin? And what are some of the tools that and strategies and even steps that you took to really begin to love yourself?
I think, and again, I can totally relate to your anxiety mm-hmm. story, because it's so tiring. And I think there's a lot of tired people out there, because you're having this external, everyone has this external image of you. You're keeping all these balls up in the air and inside you're just struggling, and it's such an intense feeling. And I totally agree. I think that living out of alignment is a big, big part of it. And that self-trust, I think for me, developing self-trust and removing self-doubt was a really, really important tool and an important way for me to improve personally my anxiety. But the moment it for me was when everything fell apart. And this is, I think, another reason I wanted to become a coach, is because, see, I think rock bottom is a really good place to be. And it, as controversial as that sounds, like, the only way is up, and that's a good place. Sometimes you need to strip away all the rubbish to really know who you are, and that was the process for me. And I think about this a lot, because I think, would I have got to where I am if it wasn't taken away from me? And the honest answer is, I don't know whether I would have. I don't know how I would have had it in me. And so that's something I'm really interested in, and for me, that's what I want to be able to help clients with, is how do you get out of that funk before everything reaches rock bottom? How do you do that without the rock bottom? So that's what I have worked on, is, you know, what are the tools that you can use before it gets to that point? Because I think a lot of it is that confidence to make that decision to love yourself. I think it starts with that, because that's the biggest decision. And it sounds simple, and it's really, really not, because I think we're told that self-love is selfish. We're told that if you're confident, you're arrogant, and those two things are complete opposites. I think especially as women, we are told that there is a box we have to fit into, and there are ways we have to be as a parent, as a partner, as a colleague, within business, you know, in all those different areas. And the only thing that really started it all was me actually asking myself, who am I? Am I allowed to swear on this?
Yeah, absolutely, go for it.
Sorry, I'm a massive swearer. Who the fuck am I? Like, and who are you living this life for? And that is a question that it really hit me hard when I realized, because I was like, I don't know who I am. Because so for me, just like you got your validation and your worth from work, I got my validation from relationships. So another part of my story is that I hated my face for about 15 years.
Oh my God, you're absolutely beautiful.
I can't even tell you how much it impacted my life. I rearranged my whole wedding because I couldn't bear having a photo from one side of my face. And I had this idea that if I was somebody's girlfriend or I was somebody's wife, that meant I was attractive. Because so my face essentially isn't straight. When I was about 12, I went to an orthodontist and they told me, your face isn't straight. We could break your jaw and realign it. And all I heard was, well, if your face isn't straight, there's something wrong with you. And that's ugly and that's unattractive. And I remember comments about, you know, there was a boy once that said to me at school, your body's okay, it's just your face that lets you down. And I used to get bullied about it. And it just became something I was really obsessed with. Like, I would never wear my hair up. I was always like this and would play with my face a lot and cover it up. And so for me, relationships were how I got my validation. And I also looked at my parents' relationship. I thought, you know, they've been together for 30 odd years. This is what you do. You get into a relationship and it's not going to be plain sailing. And if you're in a relationship, that means you're not ugly and you're worthy and someone has validated you. And I think our view on relationships is also a really fundamental problem, and how we view even the phrase your other half. I hate that phrase. And this idea that, you know, for me, I had been in a relationship constantly from the age of 14. My first relationship was 3 years. I went straight into another one, straight into another one, straight into another one. The longest I've been single was about 8 weeks before I got married. And it was a security blanket for me. And so I needed to be able to validate myself. Being single should be the default setting. You know, self-love should be that foundation that you build, rather than it being something that we look at later. It should be on what everything else is built, how you parent, what kind of friend you are, what kind of daughter or son you are, what kind of wife you are, all of those things. It should be built on that foundation of self-love, and we've got it the wrong way around. We seek a relationship, we seek finding our other half rather than finding ourselves, and that's exactly what happened to me. So that was a big part of my story too. So I think there was a having everything taken away was a really handy thing for me, because my worry of what would happen, the judgment, I had to be subjected to that judgment. And it was good. It was good for me to be judged. It was good for me to be gossiped about. It was good for me to feel that, because then I realized it doesn't matter. It does not matter. And that revelation was huge. It doesn't matter what somebody thinks of you. It doesn't matter what opinion they have about what you do. You know, even sat as what I do for my job, my family think it's crazy. My family think that's not a real job, and I still get different about it. And now I think it's not my job to make somebody else understand what makes me happy and what I do and my mindset and my way of thinking. And I actually think it's an amazing thing that everybody thinks differently and sees the world differently. But I think having that confidence to make that decision in the first place is the biggest step, and to say, I deserve more than this. And it's the hardest step. But once you start, I think you're in. I don't think you can go back from that. Of course you dip out and there's things, and it's a hard, hard process. But once you make that decision that, you know, if you can understand that everyone should deserve self-love, then you have to be included in that. If you can look at your best friend and say, well, of course she deserves to love herself. If I can look at my child and say, of course they deserve to love themselves. You have to understand that you're no different. And you have to be active about it. I think this is a thing we think, oh, if I just think that I love myself, I'll just love myself. It takes work. It takes hard, hard work. It takes daily commitment. It takes, you know, being realistic with yourself and saying, this is something I have to commit to now for the rest of my life, for myself and for everyone else around me. So I think it just, for me, really started by being interested in it, by asking myself that question, who am I? Who do I want to be? What's important to me? And really understanding what self-love was and what my version of self-love would look like.
100%. And you've just, again, just touched on some really interesting points. And I think a lot of it, you've mentioned childhood quite a lot. And I honestly think this is where so many of our traumas and issues come from, right? But one thing I want to really give my mum here is that she never put herself down in front of me. She would come into my room, burst in, having a trying-on session, she'd call it, in her clothes, and be like, look at me, don't I look fabulous, right? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, you look great, mum. Walk back in. What do you think of this? Don't I look great, right? I never, ever saw my mum or heard my mum put herself down in front of me. And I think that's had a huge impact on my life, because I did get bullied in school. I did get picked on. But I always came home and had that safety blanket and witnessed my mum just, like I say, just not put herself down, not pick herself apart. And I think that we do live in a society where we've got constantly got these marketing messages thrown in our face, especially as women. Buy this, you're going to, you know, look fabulous. Or if you don't have this, you're not good enough. All the time, constantly streaming in our faces. This is what a perfect body should look like. This is not what a good body should look like. This is how you're supposed to walk, talk, act, be. And it's so toxic. And I feel so, I'm going to say sorry for the younger generation that are growing up with social media, because honestly, Rosie, if I'd grown up with Instagram, I think I would have really struggled, because at least I could go home and switch off and be in my safe family unit. Whereas now we are always switched on. And I do feel sorry for the younger generation of children growing up. So I'd love to talk about that now, because obviously you're a mum, and I'm sure you being very aware of, you know, how as parents we have such a big impact on our children. And what sort of message would you be sort of sending out to women listening to this right now who are concerned about their children growing up and not feeling enough, not feeling good enough, because they're constantly being told that they're not good enough, basically? How are you responding to this, and what is your thought process being a mum raising, you know, a girl and a boy? What are you sort of teaching them, and what should we be aware of as parents and even non-parents? You know, I'm around young children all the time. A lot of my friends do have children. I'm very aware of what I'm saying and things. So how can we make sure that we try and, you know, help these younger generation grow up and feel like they're enough in a world where they're constantly told that they're not?
That is the million-dollar question. It's huge. Right. It's so huge. Mm. And I think there are two parts to this. There are active things you can be doing with your children, and there is also the question you have to ask yourself, do you feel good enough? Because working on yourself has to be what you show them. Because firstly, I think especially as women, a lot of our identity is, and what we're told is that we should be selfless. And so we're very, very good at putting ourselves to the bottom of the pile as parents. And actually we teach our sons especially to find partners that do that, to expect a partner to do everything, to expect a partner to put herself last. And you essentially teach your children, I think, how to show up as friends in relationships, as people generally in the world, as well as how they feel about themselves. So I think you have to start work on yourself and understand that self-love is actually the least selfish thing you'll ever do. It's the most selfless. It is the more you show up for yourself, the more you'll show up for other people too. And we have to get it out of our heads that as a mum, we can't do that. And it's not about saying I'm putting myself first. I'm saying me too. And that's a very, very different thing. And so I think doing the work on yourself is essential, because just like you said with your mum, that will make all the difference, the way that she interacted with her body. Because many of us grow up with mums who look in the mirror and say, I don't even remember, this is a very British thing, Tupperware parties. And my mum used to have Tupperware parties all the time. And all it was an opportunity for all my mum and her friends to bitch and moan and say how much they hate themselves or their lives or their husbands. And it was never a positive experience. And the majority of clients I work with, and the biggest part of my work, is going back and sorting out limiting beliefs that are formed in childhood. Because we hear so much, we absorb so much. As kids, we are sponges, you know. Realistically, we're walking around in the adult equivalent of hypnosis until about age 7. So we're absorbing all of these things. So one comment from your parents, who, you know, and I look at this and I think, my parents didn't know. We didn't have this opportunity. And it's exciting that now as a generation, we do have the opportunity to influence how our children feel in a positive way. And we have these tools and resources, and we know what self-love is. And it's becoming more mainstream. So I think we absorb so much, and it's really important how we talk about ourselves, how we talk about our bodies, also how we talk about success and our jobs and our capabilities, and really catching your own negative self-talk and understanding what you're saying to yourself is a really, really important part of that. The other side of that, I think, is active things that I do with my children. Like, we do affirmations and we talk about what we love about ourselves. And I remember my little boy was 3, and it was one of those moments where I was like, oh, this is what it's all about. And I said to him, who loves you? And he said, well, mummy loves me, and daddy loves me, and nanny loves me. And he went, and I love me. And I was like, if a 3-year-old can understand that he has to be on the list of people who love him, sorted, done. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's going to be times, like you say, there's bullying, there's life, there's Instagram, society stand, there's a whole range of things. But if you can set a solid foundation with your children, if you're active and you're creating an environment at home where, and it's not about being happy all the time. I think that's also something that's really important.
Yeah.
My children understand, my son understands what periods are, and he understands that when mummy's on her period, she might feel sad sometimes, but that's okay. He knows that he has to get the Kit Kats out of the cupboard. That's his little thing. Right. If I'm on my period, he'll say, "Mum, do you need me to get you a Kit Kat?" Because he knows. And feeling their emotions is really important. Something I really encourage my kids to do is to feel all of the emotions, because it's not about being happy all the time. It's not about never having self-doubt. It's understanding how to conquer it, because it's going to creep in sometimes, but you want those tools in place to go, well, this is how I deal with it. So I think getting to grips with yourself is the first step before you even think about doing anything else, is understanding, how do I feel about myself? Do I feel like I'm good enough? And the answer is probably no. In one area of your life or another, it may be that you sit there and go, yeah, 100%, I feel not good enough. It might be that in my job, I don't feel good enough. It might be in my relationship, I don't feel good enough. In my body, I don't feel good enough. But you need to start working on that, because even if you don't think you're actively showing that, you are. The energy that we give out, and, you know, one thing I always talk about is Wayne Dyer, an amazing motivational speaker, talks about orange juice all the time. And I go on about orange juice, orange juice, orange juice. And it's the idea that if you squeeze an orange, you'll only ever get orange juice from it. You can't ever expect to get apple juice or tomato juice. It doesn't matter who squeezes it. What's inside is what will come out. And it's the same when it comes to your self-love and your self-worth. So if you have in a content, peaceful feeling inside, that's the way you show up as a parent. That's the way you show up as a friend. And this also works on the flip side of if people are treating us badly or saying nasty things like bullies, a lot of the time that's their orange juice. That's their projection. So it works in both ways. And I think getting to grips with who you are and how you feel about yourself is number one. And then actively doing things like talking about feelings, talking about self-worth, saying affirmations, looking in the mirror, you know, and embracing themselves fully, seeing themselves as whole people from a very young age, understanding that they don't need to be seeking, you know, especially older kids as well. You're not another half of a relationship. When you're older, you don't need to be a wife or a mum if that's not what you want to do. Like, you're a whole individual person, and exactly enough in the way that you are now. But I think it's, again, it's a conscious daily activity, and it's a mindset. It is a mindset. And like I said before, that's what I hope my children inherit from me.
Yeah. That's so, so powerful. I think that, God, so many people are just going to be sitting there like going, oh, I could resonate with that. Yeah, that's me. Wow. Okay. That's something I need to work on. But you're absolutely right. If you can get down to those grassroots and understand where the lack of self-belief, the lack of self-worth, the lack of self-love comes from, then that's how you build, right? Because I think we're sort of living in an age now where it's a bit toxic positivity going on, like slap on a smile and go, yeah, I feel great. It's okay if you don't feel great every day. We all have those days, those moments where we go, do you know what? Pass me a bag of crisps and put on Netflix. I'm not speaking to anyone today. I'm out, right? And that's okay, right? To have those days. And it's okay not to be okay, right? But you're absolutely right. It's, you know, using our emotions as almost like data, feedback. Like, okay, that's interesting. You know, when we are triggered by something, oh, okay, an opportunity to learn. Or whenever I sort of start to feel like a little bit of anxiety, I go, oh, okay, time to pull back. I'm going a bit too, you know, going a bit too quickly now. I need to pull back, relax, you know, take a breath. So I think if we can learn to really tap into our emotions, we can use them for our benefit and we can really learn a lot about ourselves. But I think that, you know, sometimes it's not nice to feel down. It's not nice to feel a bit sad. So we don't want to be there. So we just sort of brush over it and we busy ourselves with cleaning, going seeing some friends or, you know, work, whatever that is. But actually, sometimes it's really good to sit in the fire and understand what's going on. oh, this is an opportunity to heal, right? But we're so busy just sort of like trying to not feel that way that we're just masking it and we're just slapping on a smile and pretending that we feel something that we're not. And that will, you know, bottle up over time if we're not dealing with those emotions. So I think that is such great advice. So start to understand yourself, start to understand your limiting beliefs. Where does that come from? And then let's say that somebody, they've done the work, they understand, okay, this is where that belief comes from. This is why I'm feeling this way. Where do they go to next? Because you've said that, and I completely agree. It's something that is ongoing. You don't just like going to the gym and doing a few bicep curls. Now you've got bicep curls the rest of your life. You've got to keep on going and exercising, right? It's the same for your mindset. So I love for you to share with the audience now, like, what are some habits, routines, practices that you do on a regular basis to make sure that your mindset is in a really good place? So yeah, I'd love to sort of for you to share a few tools that you use on a regular basis that really help.
100%. I think routine, you picked up on routine there, is really important. Mm-hmm. But also, again, just like the not having bad days, there are days when I don't do my morning routine because I'm a human being and that's okay.
Yeah.
And not being harsh on myself about that. Self-compassion has been something I've really, really worked on. But I do find, I have had to find things that work for me, and that's what it should be. It's almost like a process of elimination. So I think this is something that I say with my clients all the time. It's about creating a toolbox, but everyone's toolbox will look slightly different, but you need to experience as many tools as possible to understand the ones that work for you. So some people will love journaling. You know, if you're somebody that likes to write, feels that you get things out, and it's an easy way for you to do that, you'll love journaling. But there will be someone that will do journaling and they'll be sat there thinking, this is not for me. And that's okay. Yeah. It's not about having, I would rather somebody have three tools that they can use every day. That will keep you a lot more on track than having 10 that there's half of them you don't really like, but you use them because you think that you should. Should for me is the worst swear word. I don't like saying the word should, because I live my whole life doing things I should be doing, and it didn't make me happy. So don't, it's very easy even within self-development to fall into a trap of going, I should be doing this. I should be getting up every day and doing a million different things and meditating for 3 hours and doing all of that and then feeling bad about the fact that you haven't done it. So there's also, I think, a very interesting trap within self-development that you can almost make yourself feel bad the more you and sometimes it can be infuriating because you can think, oh my god, I've got so far to go, because you're not looking at how far you've come. But I think for me, there's meditation is a huge thing for me. Being somebody that has suffered with anxiety, meditation is something that brings me back into the now, and it's something that's been really useful. Making friends with my mirror has been huge for me. And something I talk about all the time is my inner bad bitch. So you already tell I'm a sweary person. I am just, there's a part of me. I have a very wholesome mum side of me. There's mum and she's caring and she's loving and she's all the things that she wants to be in a parent. And as a partner, I'm very soppy, I'm romantic, I'm that side of me. And something I've really tapped into that's really helped me with not caring what other people think, that's helped my confidence, is that bad bitch version of me. So when I talk about affirmations, you know, my children's affirmations, we were looking at, I'm beautiful, I'm strong, I'm enough, I love myself, all of those things. For me, I get up every morning, I look in the mirror and I go, Rosie, you're a bad bitch. Like, this, come on, you're a bad bitch, because I know that's what motivates me. But how I talk to myself won't work for some people. Bad bitch won't resonate with some people. But you need to find your bad bitch, your version of, you're a queen, you're a god, like goddess. Yeah. There's all these different words that float around. But to me, that's like, I like the snappiness of, you're a bad bitch. Like, come on, like, I need that sometimes. Yeah. For motivation, for getting shit done, like, it's got to be that bad bitch version of me. So I have tapped into that side of me, which I'd always very much shut off, I think, because I'd felt that it was there. And again, this isn't about creating something that isn't there. Some people won't resonate with that at all, and they don't have that version of them. And it's not about creating something. Somebody said to me the other day, they said, maybe I don't want to be confident because maybe I'm not a confident person. And like, maybe I think I should be confident because that's what people do. But that's because she needs to find out who she is. And this is what this is what underpins it all. And actually, this is still something that I do daily, is ask more questions about who I am, because I'm always changing. Yeah. I don't want to be this static thing that, you know, why be one version of yourself for the rest of your life when you could be 50? Like, I'm going to learn so much between today and tomorrow, potentially. So I'm going to be slightly different, but you have to daily questioning. And again, for me, that's in a form of journaling, or just even sometimes I sit and I think. So I have also had to learn to spend time alone. I think spending time alone is something that's really important. Intentional time alone is something you can do every day. And it gives you 5 minutes to have a breather, but also to ask yourself that question, you know, what is one question I can be asking? What's important to me? What do I want out of a relationship? When I look back, what do I want to look at my life and see? Am I going to ever wish that I hated my body more? No. Am I ever going to wish that I loved it more? Absolutely. You know, and I think a daily digging into who you are is huge and something you can do in various forms every day, and something I still do now, and I will do 100% until the day I die. That's a non-negotiable for me. But also those finding that version of your bad bitch, finding that whatever motivates you, whatever peps you up, because we do need that most days. I don't jump out of bed every morning being like, I love myself. It doesn't work like that, you know, but I fall back on the tools that I have to make sure that I'm putting myself in the best possible position for a good day. And if it's not a good day, I fall back on the other tools I have to make sure that I get through it and it's not as bad as the last bad day. But I think there's various different things you can be doing. And again, it's not a prescriptive. I can't say, this is what I do and here's what you should do. And don't fall into that trap of, within self-development, I should be doing this. I should be reaching this amount. I should be reading this many pages a day, and I should be listening to this many podcasts. Like, you have to find what works for you. But I almost think it actually takes confidence to find that. So again, it's just that decision to be inquisitive, like get curious. That decision to start understanding what self-love is and who you are is always the thing you have to fall back on. Because at the end of the day, I think nothing else will ever be enough. You can find your dream job. You can find your dream partner. You can find your dream house. Nothing will ever be enough if you don't think you're enough. And even if you have all of those things, you won't think you deserve it. If you'll self-sabotage it, it will influence every decision that you make. I think you have to work on your own enoughness, otherwise nothing else will ever be enough for you.
Yeah. Wow, that's so, so powerful. And I think that's probably why there's a lot of people walking around with, you know, what looks like the perfect life. They've got the house, they've got the kids, they've got the husband, they've got the money, got the nice cars, but they're miserable. And that's probably because, like you just said then, they don't believe they deserve it. They self-sabotage. I read a really good book, you might have read it or come across it, called The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks. And it's all about how we have this thermostat, and anytime we go above it in our happiness, we self-sabotage ourselves to bring ourselves back down. And I think there's so much upper limiting going on constantly all the time, because people, again, don't feel like they deserve it because they haven't worked on themselves. They don't feel enough. They don't have the self-belief. And when they do get everything that they wanted, they go, oh, okay, is this all there is? Or there's that emptiness, because perhaps maybe they've climbed that mountain to realize it was the wrong mountain because they've not got clear on what they wanted. And I think what you just said then is spending some time on your own. One of the things that I do for my self-love is I love going for a walk and actually just talking to myself. And I probably look like the nutter of Torquay, but sometimes it's so powerful because I'm just having a conversation and just going through some things that I'm thinking, and I'm thinking them out loud. And by the time I get back from that walk, I feel great. I've kind of almost had, like, you know, 30 minutes of therapy, and I feel really good again. So all of these tools. And the other thing as well, you know, they don't need to take a long time. This is the other thing. A lot of people say, I don't have time to meditate. I don't have time to move. I don't have time to do these things. Well, you know, it could be a 5-minute meditation. It could be a 10-minute walk. It could be, you know, a 2-minute journaling session. Just look in the mirror every time you wash your hands and tell yourself an affirmation. It doesn't need to be these hour-long sessions of, you know, all of these self-help practices. It can literally be 5 or 10 minutes. I think probably time is something you come up against a lot, I can imagine.
Yes, 100%. Like, I even say this, tying your things to current habits and make, so I mindfully wash up. You know, I'm the same. I love going for a walk. That's a form of meditation for me. But when my kids are here, it's not, like, you know, I'm a single mum. It's not a luxury that I get. So I mindfully wash up. And I even just thinking about how the water feels, what it smells like, the heat of the water, what I can see out of the window, that can be a 2-minute thing, but that's a grounding thing. For me, that's key in my anxiety, is feeling like I'm in the moment. So I can still do that. Finding ways that work for you. And again, it's why I don't want to fall into that trap of, this is what I should be doing. I've got to have this mountain long list of, this is my morning routine and it takes me 3 hours. Like, no, when you come down in the morning, you flick the switch on the kettle, say your affirmations while the kettle boils.
Yeah.
You know, then that becomes, oh, actually, every time I flip the switch on the kettle, I automatically start saying nice things to myself. That's a pretty cool habit. Like, it's, and it hasn't taken any time out of your day. If you're someone that struggles with time, start to begin with, just start. Don't think you've got to carve out extra time in your day. Find the pockets of time that are already there, like while the kettle boils, like whilst you're washing up.
Yeah. Again, amazing advice. But look, Rosie, I could honestly sit and chat to you all day. You've come up with just some incredible points, shared an incredible story. And I know that so many people are going to be listening to this podcast and just really sitting there reflecting on their own journey and their own lives and really sort of wanting to probably reach out to you. So for those that are sitting there right now that would love to find out more about you, where can we send them? Where can we make sure that they go to?
So I'm a big lover of Instagram. I am the real queen. That's my thing. So there's head to my Instagram, which all the details you obviously find. And I offer one-to-one coaching. I have programs. I have various different things. Also have a load of free trainings. If you sat there and you're thinking, do you know, I just want to really binge on some free content, there's 3 or 4 free trainings that you can find on the website. And there's free planners, there's various different things, but I am always willing to connect with people and wanting to connect with women, even if it's for them to just share how they're feeling and their story and to have someone that understands how it feels to not feel great about yourself. So Instagram is where I roam around and where I live. So find me there. And yeah, please, I would love to have a message. If somebody's enjoyed this or they've got a question, then absolutely reach out. Yeah.
We'll make sure we send them there. And I also want to say as well, a big thank you to you, because you are one of our educators on the Sisterhood Club platform. And, you know, your course, your education piece is so needed, because it's all very well us teaching women about business and finances and things, but let's start with the self-love piece. Let's start there. Let's make sure that before we go and learn about how to build a business and, you know, how to manage our finances and how to be better parents, let's make sure that we are coming from a place of, I am enough. I've got this. I deserve to build this business. I deserve to be an amazing parent. I deserve to, you know, go and start that career. Right? It all starts with that. So I'm so grateful that you are a part of this club. And I'm sure that our community, when we do launch, will be, Rosie, I need you on speed dial, because a lot of triggers are coming up for me. So absolutely, we'll make sure we send them to you. But Rosie, thank you so much today. And I really hope all of our listeners have enjoyed this episode. Make sure you subscribe for our newsletter to get all of our latest podcasts. And make sure you go and connect with Rosie, because she's amazing. So thank you very much, Rose.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. And if you did, please give it a little share on your social. And if you have time, please leave a review. And I hope to see you next time. Take care.